This episode was created with the support of Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. Visit us at freefm.org.nz.
Welcome to Free Left Turn here on 89.0 Independent Community Media. Good morning. Oh, no, he's not here.
Morning, Craig. How's it
going? Morning, Mick. Yeah, sorry about that. We had a bit of a moment here because our third person, he's MIA.
AWOL.
MIA.
Yeah.
Yes.
I think he's having a good time looking after his daughter's livestock down in...
Rauruma. So that's what he told us, he'd be away. So we're just kind of mocking him not being here.
I did have some sympathy on Monday because it was quite cold here on Monday.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, he's at a high elevation. It'd be a lot colder. Be a lot colder.
Yes, and he probably hasn't had much of the news that we've had.
No, I think when he goes away, he switches his phone off, doesn't take his computer, just...
Yeah. Joe's basically
off grid
stuff. Yeah,
yeah. You need a break sometimes.
A mental break from all that stuff. Yeah,
because
yeah.
It's never ending.
Yeah,
so as we know, this week it's been a rather busy week.
Yeah, we can start off with a more subtle approach to that.
What's that?
That I returned back to work after 2 weeks.
With a bit of a shock to the system.
Yes, there's a lot of work waiting for me. Our new building was officially opened yesterday.
Oh, it's up and running, is it?
It was open, and once the official part of it had finished,
right.
Then it was open to members of the community to have a look around.
Oh, right.
Because by Monday, the space where we work, that's the staff, will be closed to the public.
Right.
Mm.
Okay.
Yeah. So. Yep.
So are people happy with the new building?
Well, yeah, I am. I'll be moving in there probably in dribs and drabs over next week,
mm-hmm.
because I've got other things to do, like other appointments to deal with. I showed my wife through the place because there were guided tours for people, but I gave it the personal touch.
How big a place is it where you need the guided tours? Is it quite big, this building? Is it quite substantial?
It's quite substantial for a building of its type.
Right. So this building houses various community groups?
It houses us as a main occupant.
Right.
It's known currently as the Pukiti Neighbourhood House, but it will have a name change.
There'll be little satellite organisations that...
They could basically work from there.
With, right.
Yeah, on-site budgeting, on-site lawyer, mm-hmm. on-site whatever
good,
else.
We need that. We need some pro bono work from...
For a lot of people out there,
a lot of people, yeah.
Yeah, so that opened up yesterday. I didn't go to the official opening. I went to the blessing of the building, which happened before I went on leave, which was good enough for me.
Right.
Yeah, so local hapu went through on that particular day and just blessed the building as he walked through the place. And I think,
right.
And I sort of think, well, official, I'm not a fan of the council, so I'll just stay off away. Otherwise, because they have annoyed me over the last little while. So
The council aren't too popular this week because we just had some roadworks down our way, just almost completed.
Oh, yeah.
Where Fred and I live in that area, Flynn, Cambridge Road and that area.
Yeah, I understand.
They've just reconfigured the roads and the footpaths and they're putting in traffic lights and cycle track. $780,000.
Yes, $780,000.
And people aren't happy because they're now, if you park in front of the shops, you now got to back out into oncoming traffic to pull away, which they always had to do before anyway, but now they're right in. They've got less room to manoeuvre.
Yeah, because you used to have quite a wide swing, out.
Yeah.
And then you could go in.
But they've reinstated the cycle lane, which has pushed it further out.
Mm,
and I was waiting for the bus the other day, and I watched six near misses. Oh, people pulling out too soon, too late.
Yeah, because they're
thinking, whoa, that could have been nasty.
Yeah, it's because it's probably people who are used to the old way of parking there.
I think that was just as bad before it went in.
Oh, okay.
I've noticed the drive around here is shocking. Mm. People taking chances or can't anticipate someone approaching their speed or whatever, you know. And
yeah, I think we're near misses. We got caught out like that over Comrie Road, Comrie's Road, pulling up from Linden Court.
Mm-hmm.
And there was roadworks along up to the Heafy Terrace. Oh no, Heafy Terrace, Hokunui Road, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
And they, because they were thinking about putting lights in there, and we know that it was a reduced speed in that area.
Right.
But I'm positive that car that tooted at us was going beyond that speed of a restriction.
Too many people going too fast and running red lights and all the rest of it.
Or running red lights or not obeying the rules. There was, I think there was, there was some action somewhere around roadworks involving the police because they were wanting people to slow down, but people just go through roadworks like that. Yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
And then something terrible happens and they're terribly sorry.
Yeah, well, I think you were speeding there, I think, by the looks of it. I don't think you had your indicators on, I believe. You need to feel the heat of your lamp.
Well, what's worse is when you see people indicating to turn right and they turn left because they've forgotten to change their indicator.
Yeah, oh, you see a lot of that too.
It's terrible.
They're also talking about, and I always thought this was mandatory anyway, to allow buses to pull out from bus stops.
Well, I think in Wellington, they used to have things like on the back of the buses, give way to the bus.
Yeah, but a lot of people don't, they toot their bloody horns.
No.
And they do this or do this or do this, give the one finger or the two fingers or the fist or mouth off something.
Everyone's in too much of a hurry.
Yeah, well, I think I always thought the buses had it right away, that you just wait till the bus pulled out before you...
Well, it doesn't cost anything.
No, no.
You're talking of
time.
Half a minute.
Yeah, it's only half a minute of your time.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, beggar's belief, eh?
Yeah, angry society, eh?
It's my right. Yeah. They all seem to bang on about their rights, but they forget about the other half of that equation is with rights go privileges.
Yeah, yeah. Patience and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Now,
anyway, it's been a busy week though internationally.
Yes, the what we call the illegal attack on Iran.
Yeah, I feel sorry for the people of Iran because they copy it from all directions, don't they? Really?
Yeah,
they people on the street.
Yeah, if you look at a map of Iran,
mm-hmm.
there are countries that are around it all have U.S. bases.
Mm.
Yeah.
That's also part of the Greater Israel plan of Israel, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Syria, Iraq, Iran, Lebanon, Egypt. Well, they did have a bit of Egypt for a while until they gave it back.
Yeah, and potentially Turkey.
And yes.
Yeah, the great Zionist plan. Yeah.
And so far, it's just one big cluster of fire trucks.
Yes, because people are there. People who have lived, who the descendants of those have lived there for centuries, are not going to go.
No.
No matter what the Zionist state says.
No, when you get pushed to that extreme, you're thinking, well, you'd fight back, eh? And I couldn't get over the fact that the Americans seemed a bit surprised, even angry, that the Iranians had the temerity to fire back.
Yes, no, because they didn't bend the knee, did they?
They didn't bend the knee, and they because I think I caught a clip on Al Jazeera played Trump talking about, we had to do this because he wasn't happy with the way negotiations were going. And I thought to myself, they didn't bend a knee, they probably gave him the finger.
And they don't
trust them. Why would you trust them?
Yes, and that for people would require a historical lesson. Why they don't trust, Iranians don't trust the USA. It goes back to 1953.
And probably before then too, I
imagine. Probably, yeah, but...
Interference.
Yeah, but I think the crucial...
The crunch was 53.
53 when they didn't like the Mossadegh government because he wasn't a communist, but I think he was more of a modern sort of thinking sort of person.
Oh, and that wasn't good enough.
So and he wanted to nationalise the oil. Nationalise the oil so that it would benefit his fellow Iranians.
Heaven forbid.
And because we know it was BP oil. BP was involved in there.
Yeah.
So it also involved US interests.
Mm-hmm.
So a plan was hatched to overthrow the Mossadegh government because we don't want the profits of the oil industry going to the people of Iran. We want it to go to our shareholders. Yes, so
that same message is echoed across the planet for decades, centuries.
So we will foster an overthrow of a legitimately elected government.
They were elected.
Legitimately elected.
Right.
And we will replace that government with our stooge in the form of the Shah, and to even right, you know what they call it, sweeten the deal. We will train a secret police, the SAVAK, to look after our interests there.
Yeah.
And this happened, and this was in place till 79.
Yeah, we all know what happened then.
What happened then. We know that Shah was given the old heave-ho, and in that mix, the Ayatollah Khamenei came back.
Yeah.
Because Ayatollah Khamenei had been exiled from Iran.
He was in Paris or something, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was chucked into the boot of the car and sent out of the country and went to Paris. So he was sent to Paris or France.
So it's the same old story, isn't it?
Yeah, so... And for a better word, and sorry for the crudity, what pissed the US off, USA off, USA off, was when the revolution stormed the embassy and held those US citizens for a number of months.
Yeah.
They didn't like that at all. And they're still crying about it.
Yeah.
40-odd years later. So this is what, and then with that, with the Iranian revolution, it came a theocratic government, which is oppressive.
Yes.
We all know that.
I don't hold the Iranian government in any high regard.
No, nor do I. Nor do I.
But I know it's...
Nor do I.
Every time foreigners interfere, it gets worse.
Yeah, so they didn't... So the government, the current regime, didn't want to bend its knees to the United States.
Yeah.
They are supposedly were on the verge of creating a nuclear weapon... Supposedly.
With no evidence.
It was proven to be a no evidence. Does that remind you of something? Yes. The weapons of mass destruction myth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That turned out
bloody appallingly.
Yeah.
Millions of people lost their lives. So they, on a pretext, and we know, we go back to the WMD, and we go to Iraq. Do you recall when... the Israelis bombed the reactor in Baghdad.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
So kind of the same players, kind of the same MO.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the same vested interests.
Yeah. So I think Israel initiated the attack. They attacked and knocked and murdered the supreme leader, members of his family, and part of the command. And then the USA joined in.
Yeah.
And what they've done is also one of the most appalling parts of this was a school for
schoolgirls, wasn't it?
Schoolgirls was bombed in I think it was in the south, wasn't it?
Something like that. Yeah,
Mirba or something like that. Some place in southern Iraq.
80 kids got killed in it, plus other civilians.
Yeah. So there were rumours that it was an Israeli state missile. Then the next rumour was that it was a misfired Iranian missile. But I think they've kind of confirmed that it was a US missile.
Yeah, it brings to mind that old adage about truth is the first casualty of war.
Yes, it is, yeah. Yeah.
And it's just rampant. I mean, I have listened to some of the broadcasts on Al Jazeera covering this, but I can't stand listening to the likes of Trump, Vance, Rubio, Hesketh, and and the rest of his cronies spouting all this garbage.
Yeah, yeah, it's just utter crap.
Yeah, it's they keep saying, oh, it's not about a regime change. Well, in that case, why are you bombing them?
Yeah, we also learnt from
because if the Iranians were played ball, the Americans wouldn't be touching them, because they might be bastards, but they'd be their bastards. And it's the same recipe, the same formula they had in
Iraq.
Iraq.
Yeah,
they knew he was an utter
pig of a man. Yeah,
pig of a man. Yeah. But he was their man. Same in Chile and all these other places in South America. They had ruthless right wing authoritarian governments and dictatorships, but they did business with them because that's what it's all about. It's business.
It's not about we the people there. No. It's about,
despite all the rhetoric about sovereignty and human rights, blah blah blah, it's business as usual.
Yeah, but listening to academics speaking on Democracy Now,
yeah,
we know that we learn that the supreme leader was dying of cancer.
He was an ill man. Yeah,
he was ill. So they knew that. They were saying that. But what they have initiated, and I think it's based on the earlier illegal attack, was that they have set up a structure of leadership.
Oh, you have to step in when...
Yeah, and it's been layered. I think it's got about a layer of about three. Mm. If one is knocked out, then the next one's coming through, and so on. Well, so they've put that in place. So you may not... It's kind of the
Hydra example. Lindsay made his point. He said, oh, well, we've cut that, when the Hadis phrase it, or we've cut the head of the Islamic
whatever it was.
And I thought, yes, but you cut the head off, two more grow. It doesn't solve the problem.
No, you're basically...
And as you say, they're all geared up. Oh, one's taken out and no one steps up. He gets taken out, he or she... Yeah, it's all organised.
So, to I think that the perfect model to initiate a regime change, particularly if you've got a not so pleasant regime, is through a process of modernisation and
let a country develop,
evolve over time.
Yeah.
This mechanism will entrench basically what you already got,
and it will reinforce any negative feelings.
Yeah, towards the United States.
And wherever else that interferes.
Yeah, you just keep well alone. So, well, the theocratic regime may have modernised, may have been sort of evolved into...
If it had been given the time.
Yeah, and it takes time. It's not just what happens in one day.
No.
No, so things kind of evolve. And then you have modern ideas, progressive people coming into spaces like even within their cleric space. You hear within the Catholic Church, you'll have progressives versus conservatives. So, and if progressives hold the line, then ideas, modern ideas sort of flourish.
Yeah.
And this probably potentially could have happened there. But no way now. You've killed off the supreme leader, and what you've done is you've pissed off 300 million Shiites.
Yeah.
Yeah, they've killed you. You murdered their supreme leader. He's now a martyr, in the eyes of those Shiites, and you've just opened a potential Pandora's box.
Yeah.
So, and we've seen protests in Pakistan. They tried to storm the U.S. consulate in Karachi. Yeah. There's protests among Shiites residing in India. And I suspect that there's ill feeling in other places where Shiites are predominant.
Yeah.
And
it's a cluster of fire trucks.
And you have also there's a potential that there may have been sleeper cells in Western nations, including mainland United States.
Yeah.
They're waiting for an opportunity to initiate suicide attacks. This opens the door.
Well, you're
for that.
Pushing people to extremism, aren't you?
Yeah, just like they've had sleepers, like Mossad and the CIA have had sleepers in certain countries.
Yeah.
Do you got to think that these countries with these what you would deem to be terrible regimes would also have sleeper cells in Western countries?
Yeah.
So. There you go.
And where does New Zealand government stand on this?
Well, that's an interesting question, because You've got a photo there or cartoon there, which we can't show anybody.
Yeah, but for the benefit of the listeners, we've got a Rod Emerson's view. Is a cartoon. It's called The Fence Sitter. And the cartoon depicts a certain individual in a blue suit with no hair in New Zealand with his back to us, and he's looking into the war clouds, and the clouds say international rules-based order.
Yeah.
And I see Hannah Clark was out this week condemning the stance that the New Zealand government, and she's afraid that we might be tempted to go down that slippery slope.
Yeah, we are
involved.
Yeah. His to me, along with the so-called foreign minister, look very weak. Look like weak representatives of this nation.
Yeah.
They didn't. What they did, and this is the same as what Starmer, the Germans done. French Macron Hussein have done is condemn the retaliatory attacks, but not heavily condemn the illegal attack.
No, it's amazing that, isn't it?
Yeah, because it's
they had the audacity to fire back.
Yeah, and they're firing back at
military targets,
Western interests.
Yeah.
We're going to protect those. And interestingly, the drone attack on Cyprus.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that Starmer sounded, well, you allowed that base as a spy to spy on Gaza to help your Zionist mates.
Mm.
Seriously, bloody right. They got bombed. Yeah, I'm sorry. We don't make no apologies here.
Yeah.
That's what they did. They used that base. You know the name of the base. Akatari, is it? Or
something like that.
To spy. And they helped the Zionist state try to pinpoint where Hamas fighters were in Gaza. So you got what you deserved.
Well, she goes, Hannah Clark goes on to say that the colonialist government, the government we've got today, has appeared far more militaristic than the last national government. And she suspected if it had been in power, it would have invaded Iraq alongside the US in 2003. The UK has announced it will allow US to use British bases to strike Iran in response to Iranian counter-attacks. Clark said that this was a slippery slope that New Zealand must resist. What one would want to hear from the New Zealand Prime Minister today is that New Zealand is not walking down that slope.
Yeah, well, we know from that certain one country is alone has said that the US will not be allowed to use their bases to bomb Iran.
Oh, it's Spain.
Spain, yeah. Yeah. Although one of those bases would have been a perfect fit for the USA because it's, I don't know what it's in Spanish, but it looked like moron to me.
Mm.
Yeah. and I think there's pressure on the Scottish First Minister about the use of a Scottish base. Is it Prestwick?
Might be.
Yeah. Being used for that exact purpose. And we know that Trump got his wife Runson in a twist over Britain not allowing, I think it's, was it Diego Garcia as a launch pad, but I think they may have relented on that.
They've changed their mind.
Yeah, cowardly.
But he got in a hump over 2 days because Starmer wanted to think about it.
Well, it's an illegal war. Yeah, if you involve yourself in that illegal war on the side of the aggressor, then you're just as illegal.
Yeah. So, mm-hmm. the guy in the UN, Tony Guterres, he must be pulling his hair out. He must be bald by now.
It's a bit like that.
Trying to get reason back on the table. No, back off and good because he's safe. Wars don't settle anything. The victor he might triumph, but then the vanquished will buy their time and then hit back with, as you say, with sleeper cells or some form of resistance. And it doesn't solve the problem because it seems like war is now the first option, where once upon a time war used to be the last resort. And it was dialogue, negotiation. But not now. It seems to be. We'll just hit them.
It's a legal war, they were saying, for the reasons that there was two reasons. There was an academic that said it.
Jeffrey Sash?
No, it wasn't him. It was a woman from, I forget where she was from, But she was. She did say there were two reasons that would initiate a war, and whatever the this war particular legal war didn't fit in within that paradigm.
Yeah. No. Well, I see the Democrats forced the matter to be brought to the Congress, but the vote didn't swing their way.
No, because of those stupid Republicans, eh? Yeah. Warmongering sods.
Because I think, I can't remember, was it, who's the Democrat governor of, is it Bill Walsh? I think it was him. He said that there's certain criteria that has to be met before we can take this sort of action, and he wasn't satisfied that the criteria had been met.
Congress have got to be the ones that do it. Yeah. They're going to rubber stamp it.
Yeah.
And they never did.
No.
So it's illegal. It's illegal. There was no aggression shown by the country being attacked. That was one. That's one. If there was a sign of an aggression and an aggressor attack, then that's one reason. But there was no aggression. Iran hadn't attacked anybody.
No,
they attacked Iran for no reason, except for that stupid nuclear possible nuclear capability.
Which has been disputed.
Yeah, it's been, and it's been disputed high up.
And they keep denying this is about regime change.
Yeah, it's nonsense. It's just open. It's open. Just illegal war.
Yeah, and I see that the Shah's son is, been chipping in and rah rah rahing the locals to come out and revolt. And he's part of the elite, part of the problem.
He is part of the problem. He's part of the problem from 40 plus years ago.
Yeah.
But the interesting is that when you're talking to academics who are probably Iranian, not Iranian based, but based in the United States, but are Iranian, they say one particularly was saying that whatever he says, the Shah's son says, he doesn't have the backing within the country. He doesn't have the foundations to do anything.
Yeah.
He would have to be propped up.
Yeah.
By an occupation force.
Here we go again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's been mixed reaction amongst the Iranian community in New Zealand too. Some people have been cheering like mad on the streets and others have been condemning what's happened.
And the rah-rah crowd, they only go back to 1979.
Yeah.
But you have to say to them, are you a fan of the Shah? Do you remember what the Savak done?
And I rather suspect those individuals, because they were part of the elite. They benefited from that regime.
Yeah, they're the same rah-rah crowd that belong to the Cubans that base themselves in Florida.
Yep, exactly the same.
They are privileged people. They're not the ones probably the ordinary Cubans, the ordinary Iranians. No, they're far from it.
Yep.
They were able to get out of the country because they probably had wealth.
I mean, that's been reputable. People in Ukraine, or wherever it's been striped, the elites always get out.
Yeah. So you've got to be very careful what they said. I know there was a comment under Emerson's cartoon from a woman who I saw over Facebook, and I also saw her on the TV.
Oh, Samira Taghavi.
Yeah, she's one of these Iranian New Zealanders.
Yeah.
Probably criticising Helen Clark for what she was saying. But is she an elite from the day, or her family an elite from the days of
the Shah? I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah.
She looks well-dressed and turned out.
Yeah, so...
Educated.
And if you probably read her article, does she mention the sort of darker side of the Shah's regime?
Yeah.
That's what you would need
to... She talks about going to the Clark's AUT talk last Thursday. This is... Wednesday of this week.
Yeah,
so the previous Thursday.
And I sort of kind of recall.
And she said that she's quite unaffected by realism. That's what her comments about Clark's speech.
Well, I think we can go back to that. But they also spoke to somebody else at that same rally, and all that person could say is anything within the last 40 years. So the theocratic regime has been in power since about 79, 80.
79,
that right? Yeah. So, any earlier thoughts on what happened before then, when certain people did well, not everybody,
no,
but certain people did well, it was kind of gone in the mist somewhere.
Conveniently forgotten.
Yeah, conveniently forgotten. So you've got to be very careful what you say.
Yeah.
You need to look at the history. I think for modern history, you need to look at the history from at Iran from about 1953 onwards, yeah. And what's happened.
Clark goes on to say that the argument's about the fact that Iran's regime was brutal. Yes, it is brutal.
I don't defend
the Iranian government. Reminded her of the campaign to invade Iraq in 2003, which as Prime Minister she rejected. She goes on to say, we were fed the same lines, that Saddam Hussein's a bad man. He kills his people, he's got weapons of mass destruction, blah, blah, blah. There was no imminent threat of attack against those who attacked Iraq, and as history has shown, deaths which flowed from the intervention were countless thousands, not only from military means, but from the terrorism, the hunger, the impoverishment that followed.
Mm.
False regime changes do not end well.
I think those words are good.
Well, it echoes what you've saying. Yeah, imposing a convenient puppet regime doesn't bode well for the local population.
No, it doesn't. It never has, and it still goes on. Yeah.
All through history. You can go through any era in history, and the same thing has happened before.
Yeah, it has. Yeah, we know all this.
Yeah.
Libya, Syria, Lebanon, mm-hmm.
and on and on. Where we go? Yeah.
Yeah. There's no thinking. Well, what would have happened if we allowed a progressive change through just a modernisation.
Well, as you say, let a country evolve
gradually
and solve that country's problems by those locals involved and invested.
Yeah. And don't pinch their resources. Like
but them. We've been interfering and ripping them off for centuries.
Iran's been the ones where they've been ripped off around the oil. Because who benefits from the... who benefited from the oil during the Shah years? It wasn't the locals.
No. And it certainly wasn't the locals in America, it was the oil companies.
Yeah. That's what happened in Venezuela, the same thing. Yeah.
Well, that's going on, yeah.
Yeah, so who benefited from the oil sort of pre-Chavez days? It wasn't the locals.
No.
And who benefits from, So this is why I thought was quite funny in a way was when I think there was a change of government in one of the Western African states. I think it might have been either Burkina Faso or Niger, and who controlled the uranium. And I think it is Niger, and basically the military junta said, it's not going to bloody France. It's going to go to the Russians.
Yeah.
Ooh, they didn't like that either. That went down like a lead balloon. Yeah.
Yeah, so I guess watch this space and hope it doesn't get any worse.
I probably think it will get worse. Because there's a few things mentioned and that we kind of touched on and mentioned there. There was also around about 1980, well, the start of it was that Iran-Iraq war.
1980 to 1988.
Yeah, and
the bloodshed that was spilt there.
And I think the US backed the Iraqis against the Iranians because basically they still had their G strings and a twist over that whole embassy thing.
Yeah.
So that was a protracted long war, and I think the Iranians were the ones who suffered the most. They have over a million casualties in that war. Yeah. This is what I mean when we go fast forward to now. If the US want to do a ground invasion of Iraq, it has the potential to turn into exactly that.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
Given the size of the country and given the layout of the country. Yeah.
Yeah, but they don't seem to...
think that. They're too stupid. And they stupidly bombed them, so,
Biggest belief, eh?
Yeah. You've probably figured out already if you've done earlier on that it seems to be that the strings are being pulled from the Knesset.
Yeah. I rather suspect that's the case.
Yeah. And you talk about Helen Clark. Didn't her government involve us in that stupid Afghan war?
But didn't she? I was under pressure. She sent engineers, though, didn't she?
Yeah. Well, we know we lost military personnel there.
Right.
The name that comes to mind is a soldier called Rory Malone, because he was the great grandson of the Joker who was killed at Chunuk. Was it not Chunuk Bay? at Gallipoli anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think we lost others as well, but we involved ourselves in there, and that created a kind of a schism in the coalition government of the time, because the alliance were deeply opposed to it. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. So just remind of a little bit of historical context there. Yeah. The other thing about this whole legal war is we're not getting a clear picture of the damage done within the Zionist state.
No, they've clamped down on it.
Yeah, yeah. So we know that there's been people have been sending out stuff, and it would be under their laws, it would be highly illegal, but it does show significant damage to what I believe is Tel Aviv.
Right. Did you say before we came in here that some people have been arrested?
That people have been threatened with arrest and imprisonment for it. Yeah, right. Yeah. We don't get a clear picture of what's on the ground.
And of course, the other ramifications of all this, if this goes on for too long, one, all prices will start going, and then the food supply chain.
Yeah, yeah.
Because obviously, I think there's 150 or 200 ships are stocked up in Hormuz, I think.
Yeah, and I think they want to shut that off, don't they? They have.
And so that means that shipping companies will have to go longer distances to deliver goods and services, which means the cost will go up. So people need to think about that too before they get too carried away about who they support, because it's going to impact in their pockets.
Yeah, and the Houthis out of Yemen have made it very clear that they will target shipping that belongs to the aggressors.
Yeah,
and it doesn't matter who it is. US Zionist interest, British interest, French interest. Yeah.
So it could go seriously wrong.
Yeah, badly wrong. It's not about regime change. You've actually given the old hornet's nest a bit of a kick.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah. As you say, war should have been the last resort. But then again, the Iranians haven't shown any aggressive intent. Okay, they may have backed Hezbollah, Hamas, and others.
That's the pretext. They've been encouraging terrorist behaviour. Blah blah blah.
So, but why have they? Why has that been encouraged? What's the rationale why they did it in the first place? Yes. Because if you're sticking your beacon.
But it never gets a mention.
No, doesn't matter. Mention at all. Yeah. No. So it's really dominated the news. Alongside what I believe poor polling of our current government.
Yeah, because we were talking before we came on air that the polls come out and people want the elites to be paying more of their fair share of tax.
We've mentioned this
several
ad nauseum on the show about that.
I think the figure I bring, 68%, something like that. I was talking to someone yesterday, and she said, was talking about this poll, and she gave the example. She was going to buy some coffee.
Yeah.
And I think a brand of coffee was $12. I assume it was a kilo, just for argument's sake.
Yeah.
That same kilo now costs between $35 and $45.
Yeah, so it's gone up significantly.
And that's coffee. I would consider a luxury item. It's not essential, but other food. And I was talking to someone else, and like avocados had gone up by $3.
Yeah,
I thought, is that each or is that kilo?
Yeah, we'll see.
I can imagine it'd be an individual avocado has gone up by $3. I wouldn't be surprised.
No, so there's all these things are connected.
Mm.
You be careful what you ask for.
Yeah, or come back to bite you on the bum.
Yeah, yeah. So this government is shown to be deeply popular, and one of the things that I took note of, and it's a bit of a side to this, is that a former national MP who had been, and she stated that she'd been a member of the National Party for 50 years, she's given up her membership of the National Party and joined TOP.
Wow.
Her name feels
that strongly.
And it's not because of what the matters of West does. Her name is Jackie Blue.
Right.
And her her rationale for that is because of the equity stuff, pay equity stuff.
Yeah. That's real, and it's like a heck of a game.
Yeah, so, yeah, so to do that, and then the reporters went to the person I call Dolores Umbridge from the Harry Potter stuff,
right.
Willis, because she dresses almost like
that. Oh, that's what she had to go, because Labour wanted to propose an equity, pay equity thing, yeah, and fair attack.
They went to her office for comment on Jackie Blue's leaving the National Party. No comment at all.
That speaks volumes, doesn't it?
It speaks lots.
Yeah.
But you give somebody who has a long service to a particular organisation to give up not being giving up their membership for that for one particular reason, it must be pretty bad to do that.
Yeah.
And the pay equity was, as far as she was concerned, the pay equity stuff really, really, really hurt because it involved a lot of people.
Yeah, predominantly women.
Yeah. Because there was this forum that set up of former National Labour, I think New Zealand First MPs, and they met and they had their own little forum to discuss this thing about the pay equity stuff, and they came back with a report,
right.
And it was not
complimentary. Well,
complimentary would be the word I would use now to the current government over that whole matter of pay equity. So it was an interesting one. I found that more of an interesting in that general politics of our nation.
But the trouble is, it doesn't change anything, does it?
I know. But
it's a voice of protest, a voice of dissent. But these elites aren't going to listen. They're not interested in listening.
Yeah, but she was a minister in the key government.
Like she was high level.
So she wasn't just a backbencher. Backbencher. No, she was fairly high up.
Well, one would hope that our elites would listen, but I don't think they are. I don't think they are listening. They're too busy feathering their own nests, either directly or indirectly, and those of their friends.
And there'll be plenty of people feathering nests worldwide over this war too.
Obscene profits will be made by certain individuals and corporations.
We go back on that one again. So we're going back to the war again, or the illegal war. Them skiting about they basically knocked out Iran's capability. But the other thing that's in the background is that maybe Iran are playing the long game and waiting for the US and the Zionist state's weapons supply to kind of run out. And I think they were talking about it too. I think the types of missiles they used to hit launch pads is running out.
Yeah, I imagine they'd be ratcheting up though, wouldn't they? Those missiles they're using are expensive.
Yeah, that's why they don't probably have a hell of a lot of them. So I have not heard, what I haven't heard from the Iranian side is that they have this hypersonic missile.
Mm.
But I haven't heard that they've used it. I know they've used a lot of attack drones and probably conventional missiles. But we haven't heard anything else about the hypersonic ones, because they did use one of them to target Israel.
I know Russians have got them as well, and apparently once these things are launched, they're impossible to hit, to take them down.
Yeah, that's what. And I think they used, I think on their attacks on Israel during the first illegal war, they used a hypersonic.
Right.
And it caused quite a bit of damage, to be frank. So I just wonder, I know that the Russians have their own bloody issues around fighting the Ukrainian stuff, but I just wonder how many of those hypersonic missiles have been held back.
Yeah.
Because they're potential to be quite destructive.
So watch this space, I think.
Because we know by the damage done in with the US as allies, and I use that loosely in inverted commas, that kind of damage hasn't been done by hypersonic stuff. So I think you say watch the space.
Because this is week two, isn't it? Or was this the end of the week, first week?
No, it started last Saturday evening.
So it's a week. Yeah. So If this goes on for too long, it's going to have serious economic repercussions around the planet.
Yeah, and the people who will be blamed, the Iranians shouldn't have attacked our interests. No, Trump and his cronies shouldn't have attacked Iran. Yeah. That's where it lies. Yeah, leave well alone.
Yeah, as I say, they had the temerity to defend themselves.
Yeah, we had to defend ourselves, which Venezuela didn't do.
No.
They didn't have a chance.
No.
So the Iranians, if they shut off the Strait of Hormuz, well, it's a problem for those who rely on Iranian oil.
Yeah, and it could get really messy there, couldn't it?
Yeah, it could really, and they have every right to shut it off because it's in their territory.
Yeah.
And if Trump cries about it, well, as I said before, he shouldn't have attacked them.
Mm. Mm. There's one moment I had a bit of a chuckle because apparently they've got that new $13 billion aircraft carrier, the Gerald R. Ford.
Oh, yeah, that.
It's gone into Cyprus because it can't deal with his own effluent. And I thought to myself, here we are, the leader of the free world, and they can't deal with their own proverbial.
Yeah, that's gone on for quite some time, hasn't it?
Yeah. And apparently it costs $12 million a day to run. Well, it's a floating city, isn't it? It's something like over 5,000 personnel.
Yeah.
But, here we go. This is the leader of the free world, and they can't deal with their own.
A floating city that's having a problem with something that rhymes with it.
Yeah, with lots of Richards. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. So that's just a waste of taxpayers' money. Yeah.
Oh,
those are the USA who actually pay tax.
Yes.
Not the elites.
No.
They only profit. But. The war side. Got anything else to say there, Mick?
It's caught my eye. This is an article written by David Harvey, who's a retired district court judge. And the article reads, "What taking advice really means." When politicians go in front of a rostrum and say, I've been taken or we've been taking advice. And it says, when a minister steps up to a microphone and says they're taking advice, it sounds reassuring. It does. The phrase carries a tone of caution, seriousness and responsibility. It suggests a government that does not rush into judgment, respects expertise and understands the complexity of modern policy making and blah, blah. It just goes on and on. And it says some ministers lean more heavily towards policy than detail than politics. David Seymour is a notable example, but most operate somewhere between the two. Yeah,
so-called expert advice.
Yeah, well-phrased use often signals delay and strategic ambiguity rather than clarity, which sums up quite nicely, really.
What was the name of that British judge, Magnus?
Magnus Magnusson.
No, that's the scientist, Magnus. What the hell was
it? Oh, I know. Pike. Magnus Pike.
Blinded me with science stuff.
This is blinding
me with verbal.
Yeah, verbal diarrhea.
Yeah. That's exactly what it is.
Ministers in Westminster style systems govern through advice. They rely on civil servants to brief them on legal risks, policy options, costs, implementation challenges. They consult political advisors who focus less on policy purity and more on strategy, stakeholder reactions, and how decisions will be played in the media. It goes on and on and on.
They should be talking in layman's terms.
Cites anyone who's watched Yes Minister will recognise this dynamic.
Yeah, well, there's here. Yeah. Yeah, well, you should be talking in the language of we the people.
Yeah, but mean it.
And mean it too.
Yeah. They often use that phrase, we the people, but they don't.
It's we the shareholders.
Yeah.
Or we
and
the elites.
We and us, we and them.
Yeah, it's a clear divide.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. It's,
I'm sick of him as well, old Sleazemore. Particularly over the whole Iranian thing.
Another one caught was either public abuse over district councillors on increases. We've talked about this before. Three councillors flagged this. This was in Tuesday's Times. Three councillors flagged this at an audit and risk meeting yesterday, which would have been there Monday, with one saying the abuse is now a daily occurrence. Why can't a district council say they're copping daily abuse, bearing the brunt of frustration with local government? People seem to think we can treat councillors however we like. Councillor Mylaney Ramati said, and she's been on the receiving end of abusive phone calls and Facebook tirades. Her colleague David White said people must realise you have to build bridges to make change, not set people on fire. I often wonder why people do put themselves forward for public office. I mean, I know there's venal reasons, then there's the honest, I want to serve the community.
Yeah,
reason,
that's the... Yeah.
And they seem to get attacked.
Yeah, this is why I'm...
And the vitriol and the nastiness is...
That's why I'm a critic of a current councillor here, because I think, are they all there genuinely need to serve the community? And I mean the community, not bloody ratepayers. I mean, we the people, ratepayers, renters, and whoever else lives here.
Citizens.
Yeah, citizens, basically. Are they there to serve the citizens, or are they just to serve an elite group?
I think you've answered your own question.
Yeah, and I think most of them would fit within that.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. And this one, Fred might have noticed, but he's been out of communication, but this was in Monday's paper too. Councils may be able to okay killing of protected species. Trumpian style, this is the second headline, reads, Trumpian style environmental vandalism. And the article begins with, despite warnings from officials that it could weaken wildlife protection, the government has inserted a clause into its sweeping RAM Resource Management Act replacement laws, allowing councils, not the Department of Conservation, to authorise the killing or harming of protected native species. Clause 128 is buried inside the Natural Environment Bill, removes the requirement for companies to obtain a separate Wildlife Act permit from DOC before harming protected species. Instead, approval could be granted through a standard resource consent.
Oh, yeah, that's all that fast-track stuff.
Fast-track stuff. Documents showed the three-line clause appeared around the same time Cabinet was considering back-pocket options following DOC's decision to deny a permit for an expansion of Otago's McRae's mine, and it goes on and on and on.
Oh, this is where stupid Shane Jones was mocking.
This is fast tracking. They're claiming, it's too bureaucratic to make two separate applications. Yeah, yeah. We'll just lump it all in together, and you know.
This is where Jones was mocking like conservationists, greenies, and all that.
Oh, yeah,
over the skink stuff.
Yeah,
yeah.
Or if a frog gets in the way, it's too bad for the frog.
No, it's just, as I say, it's environmental vandalism, as you rightly say. That's just...
That's just a recipe for disaster.
Yeah, that's just appalling, to be frank.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. And I think he did talk about... Well, I think he did mention frogs or...
Or skinks or something.
One of those ones,
or
yeah.
Geckos or something like that.
Yeah, that's appalling.
Yeah, and kiwis, I mean...
Yeah. Just for progress, so what? Okay.
But it won't happen in there where they live.
They don't have
a nice reserve nearby with bush and wildlife and great. But the rest of us is going to be a desert.
Yeah, and basically kill off of any...
diversity. And
particular species, yeah. Yeah.
Just very selfish, eh?
I think, the whole headline speaks for itself. Yeah. Just to make a profit, and this is part of... This is why we're criticised on the show by fast track is undemocratic, because people don't... If they do get to have a say...
It's squashed,
or the submission period is rather narrow.
And they will select what they will listen to.
Yeah, and this is why we hear such and such of a bill going through, even though it's an unpopular bill, because they've either squashed the submission period...
Mm.
Or basically, they've only listened to the. It comes back to this thing, what you were saying before.
Yeah.
What advice really means. So it comes back to that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
You're saying that there'll be a lot of work put into a submission that opposes a certain measure.
But which group will they listen to their advice as opposed to another group?
Yeah, you're not.
If they come up with a contrary opinion.
Yeah, and because that opinion is not or not to my liking, we won't listen to that, even though it may have taken a lot of intellectual input.
Yeah.
That's exactly, I think these things, those two articles there, kind of run together.
They do.
Yeah, around all that.
It's shocking, really.
Yeah, yeah. It's an appalling thing to say, well, are we sort of surrendering our environment for what? For profit?
It seems to be the case, isn't it?
Because I think they were speaking about that, about fishing as well, weren't they?
Yeah.
To,
fishing. You name it.
Yeah, to kind of open things up.
In which usually means a recipe for disaster for the fauna and flora in those areas.
Yeah, and this is opposed to, say, like, I was watching Country Calendar last week, mm-hmm. and it was a fishery one, and they were harvesting kinna.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Kinna down around Stewart Island. Mm-hmm. So they'll go and they're kind of free diving for it, so they're not got any extras there. They're just going down there, hold their breath for about a minute or two, and kind of harvest the kinna, and they know which ones to harvest,
right,
size wise. So you just watch them, because
mm-hmm.
a lot of these kinna are quite they'll be within that size range which they need,
mm-hmm.
but they go through with this gadget, which almost looks like a gardening gadget, and flick them up.
Right,
but they won't take those other ones. So sort of say, well, we'll just take the ones that we require. Those are undersized. We'll leave them there, and they probably will fatten up for the next time when come back.
It's called sustainable farming.
Yeah, and that's what it is. But this sort of thing here,
it's just rape and pillage, isn't it?
Yeah, this is just killing off a species off.
Yeah,
without no second thought.
Not thinking about, or not even caring about the ramifications of taking something out of the food chain or the diversity that has impacts.
Yeah, I was watching another program. It's on a Monday night. It talks about disaster things, and it was talking about shark population.
That's been hammered. That's, no pun intended.
Yeah, it's actually extremely so.
All because of the shark fin industry.
Yeah, that was a main player. But they didn't talk about that particularly. And I think there's also these dynamics around climate change, warmer seas, and things are being forced to move further south because they're not kind of fit within the warmer water mould.
Right.
Yeah. And it mainly talked about why were sharks attacking people?
Because they're being forced into closer contact with people.
Yeah, that's probably the main reason, and because they basically kind of look from an angle, the shape of their main prey, like for example, seals.
Yeah, I think I saw a similar program. They said that even though the contact with humans has increased, some of the shark attack numbers haven't actually increased dramatically.
No.
And it's just by chance.
By chance. And this was what happened in the main focus of the program was in the Red Sea,
mm-hmm.
where these attacks were going on.
Okay. I didn't realise there'd be sharks in the Red Sea.
There were different types of sharks.
Right.
Sharks that I'd not heard of.
Mm-hmm.
But they were quite a rare breed. And they had evidence that they were this particular shark, but they can't kill the shark because it's a rare breed.
Oh, it's not a sun shark, is it? No, it's not.
Okay. No, it's a northern. It seems to be a northern hemisphere shark. So, mm-hmm. but telling us that more closer contact with humans, probably mistaking a human for a seal or whatever it is, their main sort of food. But their populations have been hammered by. Particularly by what you were saying.
The shark fin industry.
Yeah,
it's worth big money.
Yeah, and...
And they take the fins off and they just dump
yeah,
them.
Yeah, we know
sea.
That story. It's appalling.
So they basically drown.
And then they will... Their food sources have been reduced.
Yeah. Quite,
some of these sharks, they say they were kind of starving. And all that sort of stuff.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah. What we have done...
We're stripping all those...
Yeah,
food sources out.
Yeah. Well, that brings us to the end of the show. Hopefully, Fred will be back next week and tell us of those adventures.
See you next week.
See you next week, and you'll catch us on Free FM 89.0 or on our podcast.
This Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.